Hi, Paul.
Oh, hi, Paul. Hi.
Hi. Right. Today, I'm joined by Paul Curtis, who is a specialist oil resources sector investor and special situations investor. I've known Paul for about 12 years. We got involved in cash-rich companies back in after the TMT shares bust in 2001-2002, didn't we, Paul?
That's right, yes.
Okay, so just a bit about your investing approach first, Paul. Oh, I haven't done the disclaimers. Hang on. Usual disclaimers. Nothing in this audiocast is intended or should be taken as financial advice. It's personal opinions only. Okay, so could you describe your investing approach, Paul?
I started off about 25 years ago. It's been a steep learning curve, and I quickly realized that the safest way for me anyway was to focus on value plays, that are trying to buy assets at a tangible discount, to tangible assets, and I've sort of focused on that ever since, really, and the interest in oil shares.
Okay, so assets is really your number one priority. I mean, do you look at sort of, because you don't really have a conventional portfolio, do you, in terms of having a diversified spread of sort of ordinary companies?
No. We were involved in the internet incubators, trying to break up cash-rich companies.
Mm.
But again, we're trading at a discount to NAV. And oil shares, in a bear market, oil shares offer a similar sort of risk-reward return, providing, obviously, they can survive until the oil price recovers.
So you're applying the same sort of cash-rich approach to oil companies now, presumably, then?
Yes, cash-rich and asset-rich.
Okay. But certainly in the time I've known you, you've mainly invested in resource stocks, haven't you, right throughout the sort of the resource sector boom?
That's right. I mean, I had that play on subordinated debt in 2008 when the risk-reward was compelling. But again, in a way, that was a value play.
Mm. Yeah, that was a bond thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you're happy to look at more or less any asset class, presumably, then?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, okay. What should we move on to next? Yeah, so I thought this audiocast, we'd do it as a sort of resources sector, mainly oil, really, special. Paul's, I mean, you've had a lot of experience and been highly successful in investing in resources stocks, Paul, in all the time I've known you. So talking about the oil price then, why is it that hardly anyone seems to have anticipated this collapse in the price of oil in the last few months?
Well, I think the market has seen it coming for about 3 years or so. We've had a three-year bear market in oil stocks. It's been very much death by a thousand cuts. But then it's only really sort of the last couple of months, 3-4 months, when it's been serious carnage, the oil price has fallen very heavily.
Mm.
And of course, OPEC in November deciding to withdraw all price support with production cuts, just totally pull the rug. And oil shares have followed it down.
Yeah, what's your view on the Saudi position? It just seems a very strange situation to me. I mean, is it not cutting off their own nose, you know, to spite themselves or whatever?
No, I think the Saudis are playing an absolute blinder. They've got the two objectives. One is obviously to cut out or to restrict high-cost production throughout the world, not just necessarily shale. I think in respect of shale, they've left that a bit too late, because the shale plays have now sort of made advances. They've got the infrastructure in place, and they've had the cheap finance to do that. But now, going forward, it's not too late, and I think U.S. shale is going to be absolutely fascinating to see how it plays out this year. There's so many sort of different sides to the story. And I think that could possibly surprise the market. But, I mean, the other thing the Saudis are trying to achieve is to persuade fellow OPEC members and of course, non-OPEC like Russia to a future production cuts unnecessary to step up and share the pain.
So that sounds like more of an opportunity for me, because it sounds as if, one way or another, there'll be some sort of accommodation or just demand outstripping supply that will see the oil price at some point going back up again.
Well, that's what's always happened in the past. I mean, the great thing about the oil price is the best cure for a low oil price is a low oil price. And as you say, it stimulates demand both directly boosting people will drive their cars further and therefore buy more fuel, but also from stimulating world economies, or at least those economies that aren't reliant on oil exporters.
Yeah.
So it's got that benefit. And of course, above all else, then high cost production does fall away. I don't know if you saw the Goldman Sachs report, sort of, I think in December, that said that there was something like about 7.5 million barrels a day of production would be coming off the market over the next decade as companies repriced at $70 oil. Mm. Now with oil at $50, there's obviously going to be much greater impact on supply reduction.
Yeah. So does that mean, I mean, I don't understand the dynamics of it. So if a company shuts down its well because the cash cost of production is more than what they're selling it for, is it not just mothballed, and then could they not just resume production a year or two later or whatever?
Yes, they can, but I mean, there's a number of issues. I mean, one, obviously, at the moment, a lot of them have got hedging, and then as long as until the hedging runs out, then they can continue producing. And as you say, then you've got the difference between the full cycle development cost, which is probably for most oil developments is around, I don't know, $60 to $80, $90 per barrel. Then you've got the actual cost of getting it out of the ground, and obviously they're not going to stop pumping it out of the ground until we get down to that cost where it actually costs them money to get it out of the ground.
Mm. So I mean, typically, how long have there been any analysis of how long the hedging will last?
I would guess sort of on average it's beginning to fall away sort of mid to end of the year for most of these guys.
Oh, what, this year, 2015?
This year, yes. I mean, most of them aren't hedged much beyond sort of 2016.
What about political risks? I mean, do you see any issues with, say, Putin starting a war or escalating a war in order to drive up the oil price back up again?
No, I don't. And that's not something I'm considering, really. It's sort of beyond my pay grade.
Okay. So, if you're prepared to give a sort of rough idea, what sort of timing do you see in terms of an oil price recovery then? So, end of this year, I suppose, or next year?
My gut feeling is it's going to surprise people, and I wouldn't be at all surprised. I think the thing is, what I think is trying to achieve is to scare off funding to high cost production. You don't need to decimate the market to do that, because you have a risk. If the Goldman Sachs report is right and we have too much supply coming off the table, then we go to an undersupply situation, which is perhaps even more dangerous for the world economies.
Mm.
And because oil prices will spike up to, say, $150 and push the world into depression.
I think that
the Saudis are aware of this risk, and they want a Goldilocks solution. And as long as they can curtail high-cost production, then in the medium to long term, then in the short term, I would hope that they and perhaps the Saudis and the Russians and the non-OPEC would agree to some sort of price cut. Because if you look at the figures, how much more revenue
Did you mean production cuts? Did you say
production cuts. If you look at sort of how much more overall revenue you generate at sort of, if you take sort of 100%, of your production at, say, sort of $60 versus 95% of your production at $100, it's worth cutting that 5% and getting that $100. It makes an enormous difference to your overall revenues. And so the figure is absolutely compelling, and it's in everyone's interest to get together at some point. Once they're confident that they've stopped this massive growth of U.S. shale, and he's, you know, curtailed it, then I think we could have possibly sort of some sort of production cuts as early as sort of end of Q1. I know there's not a meeting scheduled for OPEC until end of Q2, but I wouldn't be surprised if we had $40 oil, say, this quarter to get an OPEC meeting, and that would be that, and we would then bounce from there.
Mm. Okay, it sounds like it could be this could be a very good time to pick some stocks then. So shall we talk about individual stocks then going forward?
Yeah, sure. Well,
so what's
your my largest holding is in Bolaven.
That's ticker BLVN, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And that has just signed off on this asset sale of a 40% stake in its attendee development to a couple of companies at Lukoil in Russia and New Age. And that means that Bolivia will now receive $175 million, which is about just over 30p a share of cash.
Mm.
So they were effective, the shares are on just over 30p. They'll have just over 30p of cash.
Yes.
And then they're receiving further payments of another sort of 40 million, which is another 8p sort of stage payment. And they get a two-well carrier that's worth another sort of $40 million or 8p a share.
Mm.
And they're about to drill two other wells, Bomono, sort of imminently.
Isn't the risk, though, that they get all this cash and then just sort of effectively squander it, or Bertman, that's the wrong word, spend it over the next few years, so that shareholders will theoretically have a share that's priced at or below net cash, but you never see any of that cash yourselves?
Yes, that is the risk, but I've got a fairly large holding, and I'm in contact with other sort of large holders, and between us we have nearly 10% of the company, and we've made clear our thoughts to the company that 175 million should be conserved, and that basically the idea is that what we want to happen is that they drill the two Bomono wells, which are sort of this month, and then we've got the two carried wells that are going to be Q3 this year, and then we want at that point the company to still have the 175 million cash, and to then seek to sell its 20% stake in Attendee, which I would hope, worst case, would be worth another 10-20p.
Mm.
But if we have any dual success in the meantime, all these four wells are high-impact wells, then we could be looking for significantly more. I view that on that basis. I view the risk-reward as being compelling. But as you say, the important thing is that we persuade the company to conserve the cash. And I think we've got a reasonable chance of doing that, but that is a risk.
Mm. Okay, a couple of questions on that. I mean, firstly, given that it's a Russian company and given that the oil prices collapsed while this deal was being done, you know, is there still any deal risk that cash deal might fall through?
No, it's been signed off now. It was signed by the president on Friday of Cameroon.
Mm.
So the deal is unconditional.
But what about if it's a Russian oil company? What happens if they just turn around and say, we can't do it, we haven't got the cash?
Well, they signed an extension only a week ago to extend the deal's deadline by two months, so there's no indication at all that they are intending to withdraw.
Okay.
That'd be amazing. Plus, of course, they're about $40 billion market cap.
Oh, okay.
And we're talking sort of what their share of the 175 mil is, what, 120 million.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if they couldn't rustle up the money.
Mm, okay. And also, second question on that, on Bolivian, is the project still, the Atinda project, or however it's pronounced, is that still viable at $50 oil or at $40 oil?
Probably not at $40 oil, but nobody's assuming it's going to be $40 oil. I mean, the thing is, the marginal cost of production around the world on average is probably about $70 a barrel.
Oh, is it?
So once we're sort of below marginal cost, which is way where we are past where we are now, as I say, it's self-correcting. The oil price has to bounce. It cannot stay down at $50, or we'll all be walking to work. So that's the lovely thing about it. If you can find oil companies that will survive, they will bounce, because oil will bounce. And
yeah.
In terms of a global pandemic that wipes out half the population, we need oil.
Yeah, okay. What about some other stocks then, Paul? You gave me a few tickers of a few. I've had a quick look at them. Do you want to start with Fastnet?
Well, I just mentioned these because they're sort of similar sort of story to Bolivian in that sort of no matter what happens with the oil price over the next year, that they're trading at a discount to cash. And that for me is a big attraction in an uncertain world. If you get a discount to cash and some sort of assets in for free, then when you just wait for the markets to recover. Now, Fastnet's got cash of about 3.25p, that's net cash of about 3.25p, and the shares are about 2.2p.
Yeah.
And
it's tiny, isn't it? There's about 8 million market, 9 million market cap.
It is, yes. And it's an Irish one, and it's got a reasonable following in Ireland, so there's a degree of volatility there, and degree of bulletin board following, so it should at some point bounce. But they spent about $22 million on seismic from some Irish licenses.
Wow.
And they were, until a few months ago when the oil price crashed, they were anticipating farming those out to a large oil company, getting their $20 million back as a cash back, and getting a free carry on a further round of seismic.
Mm.
Now, clearly that's out the window in this market, but you've got that hope there, and at some point either the oil price will recover and people will start to begin to factor in a bit of hope for that, or they're very close to Barry Row, which I know you've been involved with, or you know of Lansdowne Oil and Gas.
Yes, I bought that indirectly by having some stock in Sea Energy, but I've sold those now.
Yeah, but they have this stake in Barry Row, as does Petro Celtic, and there does seem to be a rumour going around the market that they're close to actually finally farming this thing out. If they were to farm this out imminently, then there would be, I think, that would sort of reflect well on these licences of Fastnet, and that might sort of help re-rate the share price as well.
Mm, okay.
Also, it's one of those ones that sort of, I think, is an attractive risk-reward, because at that discount to cash, there's not going to be a great deal of downside.
Yeah.
And at some point, it will have a big dog-headed stay, it will bounce.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I wanted to, that was the point I meant to focus on earlier. One of the things I've learned from you over the years when we meet sort of periodically, and you've really drummed it into me, the importance of risk-reward, analysing that on every trade. I mean, do you want to expand on that a bit? Because that's your kind of core concept as an investor, really, isn't it?
Well, yes, I mean, I think it's if you can protect the downside, then obviously, sort of, if you're not losing money, then obviously it's much easier to make money and, you know, pocket a profit and into the bounce.
Yeah. So I mean, I must admit, I like these stock ideas you're coming up with, because they're 100% cash backed. So theoretically, the downside should be the risk should be minimal.
Well, I can say the downside is the management blowing the cash.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Fastnet, or spending it on their own, you know, on their own lifestyle.
Yeah, jobs for the boys type of thing. Do you generally meet these management teams, or not?
I've not met the Fastnet a lot. I've only recently bought in last week when the shares nosedived, so that's much more of a punt. And then the other two cash-rich plays I mentioned to you were Chariot, which is a bit more speculative in that their shares are about 8.5p.
Yeah.
The cash is about 12p, net cash about 12p.
That's ticker, I'll just do the tickers. The Chariot is CHAR, and Fastnet is Fast, FAST.
And, I mean, Chariot has got a couple of farm outs to Woodside and to Cairn Energy, and it's possible that as a result, both those companies got options to drill wells.
Yeah.
In Morocco and in Mauritania, and if they exercise those options, that would re-rate Chariot. Other than that, you know, as you say, there's a risk of management below the cash, but I think in this market, so they're quite good management, and with 12p of cash versus 8.5p of share, even just for getting those assets that they've farmed out to Woodside and to Mauritania, and the trade coming to Cairn, you still think you have to really screw up in this market to not make a good return, bearing in mind how depressed valuations are everywhere.
Yeah.
They should be coming up against, they should be coming up with some fantastic deals.
Mm, okay. And then the other one you mentioned on the cash-rich ones is actually one I picked up a little, tiny bit of stock in recently as well, Global Energy Development, ticker GED.
Yeah, that's trading at the biggest discount to cash, probably about cash, I reckon, the current net cash is about $14 million, which is about 4.5p, and the shares are about 2.25p.
Oh, no, hang on, we're talking about a different one. I've got, the one I was on about is 46p a share.
Oh, right, no, you're talking about the other one, yes.
Ah, there's two globals, are there?
Yes, that's right, yes. This is Global Energy, I think.
Yeah,
hang on. This one,
we've got, let's see, yeah, I was on about the one in Colombia. GED. Yeah.
I'm not sure. The trouble is, they didn't know what the clean balance sheet on that one is. I know they recently sold an asset for $50 million.
Yeah, I think the cash was about 70p a share, wasn't it? And the shares are 46p.
Well, I'm slightly sort of hesitant on that one because we've not seen a clean balance sheet yet.
Mm, yeah.
These companies never sort of disclose exactly what their liabilities are to offset against them, what the taxation is. I mean, what's the taxable profit there was.
No, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking about GBP.
GBP, right, yeah. Let's have a look at that one. Global Petroleum, yes.
That's Global Petroleum, yeah.
Okay, this one is 2.25p. Gosh, tiny market cap, 4.5 million.
Yes, and they've got about 14 million of cash, and they're burning about four million a year, though.
What, 14 million in sterling or in dollars?
14 million in dollars.
Dollars,
They're burning about 4 million, just under $4 million per annum.
Right.
It's not attractive, but they've got a year and a half to go before they get down to the current share price.
Mm.
But I don't like it as much as the others, but the two non-exec directors own 40%.
Yeah.
And they're losing a lot more in cash burn than they are gaining in terms of director fees.
Okay.
So the 40% holding, you would expect them to do something soon to arrest that.
To protect that. Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it? So looking for companies where directors have really chunky stakes is another thing I'd imagine. That's a good idea, isn't it?
So I would expect some sort of reverse takeover in that. I'd expect them to merge with somebody reasonably soon.
Yeah, okay. Any other oil stocks that you like at the moment, then, Paul?
We were talking earlier about hedging. I mean, the other sort of plays are companies like Ithaca.
Ithaca?
That are... IAE is the ticker.
IAE ticker, I got that one, yep.
But they're producing something like, I think it's about 16,000 barrels of oil per day, of which half of that is hedged at $102 all the way through to mid-2016.
And where are their operations?
In the North Sea.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because there was something in the Sunday Times today saying that George Osborne is poised to slash the burden on explorers in the North Sea with an emergency tax cut.
Yes, I saw that. Yes, obviously.
So that's good news, isn't it?
So it will be good news if and when it happens, but I don't think it's going to be announced until the budget, so we've still got to wait till March.
Mm, okay. So now Ithaca's a lot bigger, isn't it? That's 213 million market
cap. That's right, yeah.
And I see the enterprise value is 702, so it looks like they've got about 500 million in debt.
They have got a lot of debt, but the covenants on that debt are pretty loose. So it's unlike some of these companies where they've got onerous covenants. This one is we can be relaxed about the debt as long as they don't have production problems without hedging in place. They'll have no problems at all sort of servicing that debt.
What's their cost of production for this one?
Well, they said that with the hedging they've got, they actually break even per barrel is about $20.
Mm, but what about when the hedging expires, though?
Well, yeah, that's mid of 2016. That is the risk in that sort of we still have very low oil then. But if we do, I mean, I just think that is incredibly unlikely because if we do, then the world is shot to bits, really.
Do we know what level oil's got to get to, though, for this one, for Ithaca to stack up sort of after the hedging's expired?
I mean, $70-$80 would do them very nicely.
Right, okay. Oh, that's interesting. And any other...
These shares were about 140p for last year.
And they're now 65, aren't they?
Yeah. Another similar one is Faro, that have not got quite such good hedging, but have got no debt. And, I mean, they raised something like 60 million last May at 140p a share.
Right.
Shares are now 66p.
That ticker on that one's FPM, isn't it?
That's right. I'm not particularly recommending either Faro or Ithaca as buys at the moment because they both bounced quite significantly, especially Ithaca from its December lows.
Mm.
But I'm just as an indication that there are companies out there that look attractive that thanks to their hedging.
Yes, yes. So this is more a sort of watch list of ideas then, really, isn't it?
I'm invested. I bought quite heavily into Ithaca in December and Faro.
Mm.
I mean, the attraction of Faro, the reason I mentioned it, is because they are benefiting from the falling service industry costs because they have an exciting drill program going forward. They've got production, current production. They've got cash. But they've also got an exciting drill program sort of this year. And of course, with the service industry rates falling, that means that they may be losing on the oil price, but they will at least get something back in terms of their service costs are going to be much
lower cost. Yeah. I mean, that was something I was going to ask you about in terms of, are you looking at any oil service stocks to as potential opportunities?
No, because I think the oil companies themselves, particularly those that are like Faro and like the other one I was going to mention to you, Lek Oil, that they've got development projects and intensive drilling campaigns going forward, those are the ones that are in a sweet spot. Because they will benefit from the falling industry costs. Whereas the service industry suppliers are going to be the guys who are going to be struggling and suffering.
That's interesting. Yeah, so in many ways,
for them to benefit.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at the service companies as my first port of call for possible investments, but listening to you, I think I've got the wrong way around.
I would have thought definitely the wrong way around, really, because it's going to be all companies that recover first, and then they're going to have a honeymoon period where they've got the best of both worlds. They've got a rising oil price, and they've got low service industry costs.
Yeah.
And eventually, when the oil industry is booming again, then service industry costs will start rising.
Are you okay? No, that's very interesting, Paul. I mean, do you think analyst forecasts have come down enough yet for oil producing stocks?
Probably not, but there was that report this week, I think it was from JP Morgan and perhaps Goldman Sachs, saying that every previous bear market in oil shares, the oil shares had bounced way before the oil analysts had sort of fully revised their earnings rate going forward. So I think if you wait for the earnings, you will be too late.
Okay, so to a certain extent, really, to make the big gains, you've got to really take a bit of a flyer on some of these things, perhaps.
Well, I mean, my gut feeling is you may have seen the bottom in sort of that penultimate week of December. You look at companies like, Ithaca, it was 46p in that last week in December, and is now 66p. The Lek Oil one was 22, 23p, and is now 27, 28p. A number of them have sort of risen off their lows.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine, though, it's going to be very difficult for them to gain much traction in terms of share price move up, until there's a bounce in oil, don't you?
Yeah, I agree. It's still sort of unclear whether this rally is a dead cat bounce. My feeling is sentiment's very different. I think last year shares were in free fall, but now I sense that falling oil is more of a headwind than a millstone. Last year these things wanted to go down, shares wanted to go down, but now I just get the opposite feeling. It's that the oil price is just pushing against them as opposed to sort of pulling them down.
Okay, that's great. Is there anything else, Paul, you want to cover? I'm conscious we've run over time. We're eating into your family time on a Sunday afternoon.
No, not at all. That's fine.
Any more points you want to cover?
No. I think we've covered most of it.
Excellent. Good. Okay, brilliant. Well, let's wrap it up there then, Paul. Thanks ever so much for your time. I think there's some really great insights there.
No, well, thank you, Paul. Pleasure talking to you again.
Excellent. And maybe we'll do an update or so in 3-4 months or something?
Well, only if all the shares have gone up.
That's a good idea. Thanks again, Paul.
Okay, great. Cheers. Bye.
Cheers, bye.